From The Nation magazine, this is Start Making Sense. I'm John Wiener. Later in the show, we'll talk about Walmart. It's the biggest employer in America. The company has raised wages and become more socially conscious over the last decade, but it still provides a case study of the limits of socially conscious capitalism. Rick Wortsman will explain. His new book on Walmart and its workers is titled Still Broke. But first, abortion rights voters are reshaping politics this year. John Nichols will explain in a minute.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
It seems like we just finished the 2022 elections, but we already have some big ones coming up in 2023. And one special election last week has already showed that abortion rights remains a potent political force for liberals and progressives. For comment and analysis, we turn to John Nichols. Of course, he's national affairs correspondent for The Nation. We reached him today in Madison. John, welcome back.
John, it's an honor to be with you.
Well, I'm sure you remember that before the November 22 elections, various pundits and polls declared that since it was already 5 months after the Supreme Court reversed Roe v. Wade, and since 5 months is a long time in American politics, abortion rights had lost its power as an issue to turn out liberal and progressive voters. And of course, that turned out to be completely wrong. We saw 4 states where Democrats flipped control of a state legislative chamber: Pennsylvania, Michigan, and my home state of Minnesota. Those were all states that elected pro-choice Democratic governors as well. But social conservatives are still working to restrict abortion rights in the states. For example, Virginia, where Governor Glenn Youngkin would very much like to be considered as a 2024 GOP presidential prospect. Tell us about the latest news about abortion rights voting in Virginia.
You've set it up very well, my friend. And I think that the core thing to do is, as we focus down into Virginia for a moment, is to recognize this is a national phenomenon. There is simply no question that concerns about maintaining abortion rights are influencing our politics to a far greater extent than the political elites or the pundit class imagined. And so they're playing a lot of catch up. And one of the things that we've been doing at The Nation is paying close attention to special elections and some of these down ballot elections where you can keep measuring the influence. And Virginia is a real, you know, critical battleground, because a couple of years ago, Virginia had they have off year elections. They are in the odd years rather than even, and they elected Glenn Youngkin as their conservative Republican governor. And the Republicans did quite well in the legislature. They won a lot of seats and got a good position in the House of Representatives there, their lower house. They also got a pretty good position, but not majority in the Senate. So Youngkin has been trying to pass a 15-week ban on abortion to narrow the access to abortion. It's not the most extreme proposal, but it is certainly a limitation of abortion rights. And he's got the ability to move it, you know, quite a bit of the way, but he's had a barrier in the Senate. There was one Democratic senator who was shaky. And so Youngkin felt like if the Republicans could win a special election that took place last week, Tuesday, that they could be in a position where maybe they could pass this limits on abortion rights. That would be huge to happen in Virginia, a state that had generally been seen as trending in a liberal direction. Well, they had an election there down in Virginia Beach, and the Democratic and Republican candidates, both local, ended up having a huge amount of money flow in. Millions of dollars flowed into that race from pro-choice and anti-choice groups. It became a real referendum in many ways on abortion rights. And though it was a Republican seat, historically Republican seat that had been held by a Republican until it went vacant just, you know, before the special election, the Democrat won. And the Democrat won not by a landslide, but comfortably enough. The Democratic winner's name was Aaron Rouse.
Now, I understand that he had been a former player for the Green Bay Packers. Did he mention that in his campaign?
He sure did. and rightly so. As a Wisconsinite, I will tell you that anyone who's associated with the Packers should highlight that as a great claim to fame. And no, Aaron Rouse did in fact speak about being a former football player. And he talked about, in his ads even, had video from it, and talked about, you know, playing defense, right? You know, making sure that you protect. And he made the connection between that and abortion rights. And he said, you need somebody in the legislature who's going to defend abortion rights. It was creative advertising. It was smart, good humored. He's a very good candidate. There's no question of that. But again, this was a Republican district. So he had to climb, you know, a few extra steps to win this. And he did. Now, what that did in a couple of levels is a really big deal. It clearly solidified the pro-choice majority in the Virginia Senate. So Glenn Youngkin is not going to get his 15-week abortion ban. That's a big victory, one that ought to be noted in the overall national struggle on these issues. But it's also a signal for the rest of this year, because Virginia's special election is the first of the special elections that are going to be taking place all over the country.
And let's remember that what the Supreme Court did was not ban abortion everywhere. It just gave the states the power to decide whether to further restrict or further protect the right to abortion. So it really shifted everything in abortion politics to state elections. And where else are elections for state legislatures coming up in this year?
A lot of our political class tends to operate on a mode that in even years, you cover an election, either for president or the midterm elections for Congress. In odd years, well, then you can go cover a little bit of governing, go back to Washington or whatever. But the reality is, and you know, I don't spend time around Washington. I'm out in the country because that's where usually the political action is. But especially that's true in odd years like this. And we're going to see actually a lot of, you know, hundreds of legislative seats decided. Some will be decided in special elections like the one we've just been talking about, but some states have regularly scheduled elections in an odd year. For instance, this year, Kentucky, Mississippi, and Louisiana will elect governors. Now, what's remarkable about that is two of these states, Kentucky and Louisiana, have Democratic governors, even though they're very, at the national level, very Republican states. So it's important to watch these odd year elections because sometimes they can produce odd results, unexpected results. But also in these states, in Virginia, for instance, the legislature is all up for grabs. There's going to be major legislative elections. You're going to also have legislative elections in a number of these other states. And so as a result, you've got, I think if I'm correct, six legislative chambers that are effectively up for grabs this year. And then because of special elections around the country, including one coming up in short order in Pennsylvania, where there's a pretty close legislature, we have all sorts of places where the 2023 elections could well make a major signal, not just symbolically, but also practically, as regards the ability to protect abortion rights. They also obviously give us signals and indications for the 2024 presidential and congressional elections.
And what do you consider to be the biggest election of 2023?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. You know, I love all my elections. I think the Kentucky gubernatorial election is a really big deal, because there you've got a Democratic governor running for re-election who has been no great lefty, but he's really held the line on a whole host of issues. I'll tell you where my excitement and interest is going to be is in Mississippi, in the governor's race, because Elvis Presley's cousin is running as the Democratic nominee for governor, or likely Democratic nominee. He hasn't been nominated yet. Brandon Presley, and he's actually an elected official, a public service commissioner, a very credible candidate, and he is not above mentioning his cousin.
And isn't there also an election in Wisconsin coming up in 2023?
Well, I didn't want to brag. But of course, the most important election of 2023 is in Wisconsin, my home state, and it is a race for the state Supreme Court. And this is a big deal. The state Supreme Court in Wisconsin is divided between four conservatives and three liberals. And one of the conservative seats is open. If a liberal takes that seat, it will move to a 4-3 liberal majority. That will allow the Wisconsin Supreme Court to protect abortion rights, and perhaps most importantly, address gerrymandering. And Wisconsin has one of the most radically gerrymandered legislatures. If a case is brought and this court gets to revisit the question of how legislative districting and congressional districting occurs, you could see a sea shift in Wisconsin politics to the point where I dare say Wisconsin could be more progressive than Minnesota.
I'm speechless.
Look, I mean, this comes back to big swing elections. And the big election that defined much of the modern era in American politics was the 2010 Republican wave election, the first midterm election after Barack Obama was elected president. And you had a real Republican wave in the states. In Wisconsin, Scott Walker came to power. And one of the first things that he did was start restructuring politics. Not labor law alone, although he's very famous for that, but restructuring politics in a way that made it easier for Republicans to win. They gerrymandered the legislature to the extent that in some elections, Democratic candidates would get 200,000 more votes aggregated for legislative seats, and yet the Republicans wouldn't lose a seat. And so it's a terrible gerrymander. It's overwhelming. If the court actually looks at it in a fair and honorable way, that can be undone.
And well, the state Supreme Court election is in April. I understand there's a primary before that.
Yes, in late February. And there are two conservatives running and two liberals, which is great. I mean, it's nonpartisan. So two candidates will come out of it. And theoretically, if the right break occurred, you could have two liberal candidates come out of it. But that's unlikely. What's likely to happen is you're going to get a liberal and a conservative. There's a former Supreme Court justice running, conservative justice, who got beat 2 years ago, is very, very conservative. And I think he may have the upper hand. He's backed by a lot of very wealthy people. The two liberals, one is a circuit court judge from Milwaukee and the other circuit court judge from Madison. Either of them, I think, could fairly be said to be likely to serve as progressives. So the primary is a big deal. But I will tell you that if you do get that liberal conservative race in April, it won't just be you and me talking about it, John. The whole country will be paying attention to it, because this Supreme Court race could end up getting rid of gerrymandering. It could create a situation with fairer maps for Congress where you pick up two Democratic seats in Wisconsin. And just think about that when you have the Republicans only have a 5-seat majority in the House. And then, of course, Wisconsin is the eternal battleground state in presidential politics. And you know that the Republicans have been very active in trying to mess with election law, not just in Wisconsin, but all over the country. If you had a pro-democracy Supreme Court, that could be a huge deal.
Last question. I see you have a book coming out next month. This is one where you've got a co-author. What's his name?
I am the lower rung co-author on this book, but it is Senator Bernie Sanders. And we have a book coming out that is titled, It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism.
It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. Fabulous title.
If you want to understand many of the issues that divide America and that challenge this country, you have to look at it through a lens of capitalism, what it does, how it operates, how it is perverted in many cases by extreme greed, uber capitalism, as we refer to it, and also why we should understand that there are rational, doable repairs, that we can fix a lot of what challenges this country. And so we rely a lot on ideas that came from other parts of the world. For instance, we interviewed the education minister of Finland about Finnish education, which is, by all accounts, very good. And so at the end of the day, hopefully it is an argument that we can and should start looking at alternatives to the way we do things. Doesn't mean you're going to reject, you know, everything we do. It doesn't mean that you will adopt wholly ideas from other places. What it does mean is that as we start to think about this and think about particularly how we make sure that working class Americans have a fair shake and actually have a chance to live in an equitable and decent society, if we build from that, we can realize many of the great dreams for America.
It's okay to be angry about capitalism. We'll be talking about this next month. And the month after that, we'll be talking about the Wisconsin Supreme Court election with John Nichols. Right now, you can read his new article, Abortion Rights Voters Are Reshaping Politics, at thenation.com. Thank you, John.
Honored to be with you as always, John. Thanks for having me.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Now it's time to talk about the limits of a socially conscious capitalism. For that, we turn to Rick Wartzman. He's written for Fortune, Time, Business Week, and especially Fast Company. He's the author of several books, most recently Still Broke, Walmart's Remarkable Transformation, and the Limits of Socially Conscious Capitalism. Rick Wartzman, welcome back.
Hey, great to be with you.
Well, Walmart is the largest employer in the world, the largest private employer other than government. The Walton family, the children of the founder, Sam Walton, is the richest family in the world with an estimated wealth, Google tells me, of $224 billion. For decades, we complained about Walmart's low pay and terrible employment practices. Barbara Ehrenreich wrote a memorable chapter about Walmart in her classic book, Nickel and Dimed, about how bad it was to work there. That book came out in 2001. But since then, Walmart has changed. First of all, remind us how bad Walmart was 20 years ago.
Yeah, so awful. I mean, in many ways, the most vilified employer in the country. And I think in many ways, rightfully so. You know, this was a company that had always had this model of delivering, you know, goods to people, some high quality goods, but at low prices. But there was always been a high human cost that comes with those low prices. And although consumers benefit every time they push a cart down to the Walmart checkout line, they save money on their goods. And Walmart, I should say, has always seen that as part of their social mission, right? To provide affordable goods to folks who otherwise wouldn't have them. Again, high human cost to that. So whether it was driving manufacturing overseas, constantly chasing labor and expenses to the lowest cost country one after another, certainly changing the face of many communities by, you know, pushing mom and pop Main Street businesses out. And then, of course, in terms of how it paid its own workers, it has always paid low wages, as do many, and in fact, most retailers and many other industries. Folks really have always had a hard time getting by on a Walmart paycheck.
Yeah, let me just add a personal story here. My mother's family ran a men's clothing store in Superior, Wisconsin. For 100 years, everybody in the older generation worked at the store at some point in their lives. And when they were getting ready for their 100th anniversary celebration in 1999, Walmart opened a store in Superior, Wisconsin, killed all of downtown. All the stores went broke, including my mother's family store. My mother suddenly lost a big part of her income and became poor. So to save money, she started shopping at Walmart. Wow. Walmart killed 1,000 other downtowns and small Midwestern cities. Tower Avenue in Superior, Wisconsin was one of them. That really changed America.
It really did. And look, in some ways I think romanticize what the jobs were like at those small businesses. And there is actually a lot of evidence that even companies like Walmart pay better and provide better benefits than a lot of those very small family-owned businesses, unless you were a member of the family. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure that those workers were making, you know, much, if anything, above minimum wage themselves. But certainly aesthetically, in terms of the character of downtowns and places like Superior, that Walmart changed things, along with other big box retailers. Markedly. The other thing to add is back in 2005, 2006, 2007, you know, Walmart was vilified, you know, a lot because of its actions, but also because two unions, the Food and Commercial Workers and the Service Employees International Union, the SEIU, really went after Walmart. And Walmart, as the biggest company in America, the biggest employer in America, really became the poster child for them of everything that was wrong with corporate America, paying workers not enough to live on, folks who didn't have adequate healthcare benefits and were turning to public assistance, Medicaid or food stamps to scrape by. Walmart became the target of two really immense union campaigns, public campaigns, and that also really hurt their reputation.
I know in your book, you quote Barack Obama campaigning for president in 2008 saying, "I know I won't shop there."
Yeah, right. He was not going to step foot in Walmart. That's right.
And then Walmart changed, and so did their relationship to Obama.
Yes. So yeah, what really happened and what my book details is the changes that Walmart has made starting in 2015 and continuing on through the present. And it is the backstory of how they came to make this change. All the pressure that we just talked about, the union campaigns, other labor activists, this group, Our Walmart, now United for Respect. I suspect some of your listeners know about. They put a lot of heat on the company over time. Politicians like Bernie Sanders, the interfaith community, right? The nuns are always after Walmart, journalists like myself, a lot of pressure to change, and business operation reasons, which we can talk about. So starting in 2015, Walmart began to raise wages. Earlier than that, under the previous CEO, Lee Scott, they began to make changes around their environmental practices. They became a greener company, a more sustainable company. Far from perfect, but widely seen now in the eyes of many mainstream environmental organizations as a real corporate leader in that area. They began to give away billions of pounds of food to food banks. They lowered the price of prescription drugs. They became a more socially conscious company. And then again in 2015, they actually, the last piece to sort of come into place was actually doing something about wages and investing in their workers. A new CEO, Doug McMillon, who's the current CEO, came in 2014, and they began to actually take steps in that area as well. And so, you know, the subtitle of my book that says a remarkable transformation, not composed casually.
I want to talk a little more about why Walmart changed. You've talked about the public campaigns by the unions, by the nuns, by Bernie Sanders. There was also some personal campaigning by individuals connected to some of the Walmart family.
There were folks on the board. There were internal change agents that the company brought in, including some, you know, longtime Democratic operatives like Leslie Dock, others who had been either in the Clinton administration or part of, you know, Clinton campaign, and then eventually folks who came in from the Obama administration, from the Democratic aisles on the Hill. And so, yeah, this was a company that I think, you know, in many ways really did set out, not just for PR reasons, but for all kinds of reasons to really change and invest in its workers in new ways. A lot of this was a business imperative. They had cut labor costs so deeply that their turnover was so high. Somebody told me it was up to 200%. There's an anecdote in the book where a top executive goes in to a store and, you know, she was told by the manager the turnover was 400%, wow. Right? So every worker you see, you know, there are four others who've been in that job, you know, over the course of a year, just incredible. And you really can't run a business well. And they weren't. Shelves were empty. They were having trouble keeping just things in stock. The floor was dirty. The bathrooms were unkempt and they were losing customers as a result. Sales were declining. And so, you know, Doug McMillon knew he had to invest in the workforce in ways that they never had before.
However, one thing did not change, and that was their relationship to unions.
Yes, they have always been virulently anti-union. And yes, to the point, frankly, that the food and commercial workers, I think, has largely given up even trying to organize Walmart, you know, even today, while Amazon, their efforts to organize Amazon, their efforts to organize Starbucks and many others, right? It was certainly an aggressive year for unions and organized labor, you know, in 2022. And we've seen all kinds of activity accelerate. You know, Walmart, I think, remains, frankly, beyond the reach. It's just, it's too big. It's been too big a mountain to climb.
So Walmart did increase wages, mm-hmm. but the title of your book is Still Broke. Tell us about that.
All the positive things that they did started to get them attention and in good ways, right? From a company that had been so vilified. So Barack Obama, for example, you know, he visited a Walmart while he was president. He visited a store in Mountain View, California, to tout the company's environmental sustainability practices and frame his own energy policy. Michelle Obama, who had also, you know, sort of spoken out against Walmart, you know, she ended up touting the company for stocking foods with less fat, sugar, and salt on their shelves and helping with her Healthy America campaign. And so the company really did turn a corner in many ways. And the president, President Obama, called when they began to raise wages in 2015 to praise Doug McMillon. He called from Air Force One. And again, there was a real relationship between the White House, the Obama White House, and the company at that point. The bottom line is, the average Walmart worker still makes less than $29,000 a year. In 2015, when they began to raise wages, at the time, the starting wage was the average starting wage was $7.65 an hour, barely wow. above the federal minimum wage. Wow. And to their credit, they raised their starting wage to a minimum of $9 and then $10 in two steps. It's now to $12. their average wage is up over $17 an hour. So all, you know, very, very positive in terms of the direction they push. They've invested in training. They're providing better benefits. They're moving more to full-time workers and fewer part-timers, all to the good. But at the end of the day, again, the average Walmart worker still makes less than $29,000 a year. All too many remain on food stamps and Medicaid to scrape by. And so what this has told me, John, is that this is a company that, again, has really had a remarkable transformation in the context of their own history, of being in a you know, low-wage model. They have pushed, they've made these changes, and yet their workers are still broke. In many ways, for a company that I believe does care and wants to fix this, it's still broken, and our society is broken. And what this showed me is that corporate America on its own will never move far enough or fast enough. They're boxed in. They can't do it. We've dug the hole too deep. The only way to fix this is, I think, a government-mandated solution.
You've emphasized that the unions have not made any progress with Walmart. I think partly that's because Walmart operates in so many anti-union states. And so the only way to really reach most Walmart employees is with a higher federal minimum wage. Remind us what the federal minimum wage is right now.
It's $7.25 an hour, and it's been that way since 2009.
What's your estimate of what a living wage for workers at Walmart and everywhere else would be?
Right. So in my book, I have a very full-throated cry for a $20 an hour federally mandated living wage. That is a family living wage. It's actually calculated by a wonderful organization that spun out of Oxfam America called Living Wage for Us. It's based on real data analysis and what it takes to provide for a family, the average size, the typical size working family in this country. And what they find is that, and the reason I picked $20 an hour, 80% of Americans live in a county where the family living wage is $20 an hour or higher.
Then I want to switch a little to Walmart today, after the pandemic, after the rise of Amazon. How big a threat is Amazon to Walmart today and in the future?
I don't think Walmart's about to topple over from anybody, even another Goliath like Amazon. But it's fair to say that there is, I think, no decision that Walmart makes, no strategic move, big policy change without Amazon hovering over its shoulder as it makes those decisions, and probably vice versa, right? These are the two Goliaths slugging it out in the retail space. Interestingly, right, each is kind of moving into each other's turf. So, right, you see Walmart has, over the years, obviously Walmart.com has become, you know, much bigger, and they are doing much more online. But Amazon at the same time is moving, right, a bit more, whether it's its purchase of Whole Foods or others, you know, steps it's made is moving more into brick and mortar after wiping out so much brick and mortar. And they're both playing in the same space in terms of expanding into health services, financial services, and other things.
I know you've been reporting on Walmart for something like 20 years. Going back to the LA Times, I think it was in 2003. Of course, you've done a lot of other things in the last 20 years too, but what's it been like to follow this one story for such a long time?
Yeah, I was the business editor of the LA Times. My team, give them all the credit. They and I had a hand in shaping it, but they did the work to win a Pulitzer Prize for looking at those high human costs of low prices at Walmart. Back in 2004, we won the Pulitzer for national reporting. And since then, yes, I followed the company closely, but that's why I knew something was going on inside. You know, as they began to raise wages and make these changes, it's a story I really wanted to tell. And the institute where I have been working, the Drucker Institute, we actually got some philanthropic funding for a lifelong learning and workforce development project. And lo and behold, Walmart was one of the early funders and an important funder to us. I was really shocked at first. We got the funding. I thought, man, maybe they're trying to buy me off or something like that.
Yes.
But it didn't matter. It gave me a new window inside the company. I met some executives and I said, hey, look, who better to tell your story of the transformation that you've made than a longtime critic like me? But if I do so, I'm going to need open access And I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. I'm going to talk to the unions. I'm going to talk to United for Respect and your critics. And then I'm going to come to my own truth. And that truth is Still Broke, the book that you have there.
And if people want to know more about this, tell us a little more about United for Respect and where we can find out about them.
Yeah, you should look them up, run by a wonderful woman named Andrea Dillendorf, longtime labor activist. Again, they spun out of the Food and Commercial Workers Union as our Walmart was the group. And what made it a little different, first of all, they're not a union. They're not trying to collectively bargain against Walmart, but they have been a way for workers to organize themselves and exercise their collective voice against the company, demanding higher wages, improved benefits, and so on. They still have a very strong presence in terms of pushing against the company. And interestingly, they've now, United for Respect has expanded well beyond Walmart to actually take on Amazon. They were very involved taking on Toys R Us as it was going through bankruptcy and other low-paying retailers. So it's become an organization that now extends well beyond workers just at Walmart.
Rick Wortsman, his new book is Still Broke: Walmart's Remarkable Transformation and the Limits of Socially Conscious Capitalism. Rick, thanks for talking with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Start Making Sense, a podcast from The Nation magazine, is co-produced by the LA Review of Books and recorded in Los Angeles at our Blythe Avenue studios. Renee Reynolds is our associate producer. Alan Minsky is our producer. Ludwig Hurtado is our executive producer. D.D. Guttenplan is editor of The Nation. Bhaskar Sunkara is president of The Nation. And Katrina Vandenhoevel is publisher and editorial director of The Nation. Our theme music is from Barcelona Afrobeat, licensed by Creative Commons. You can find out more about Start Making Sense at thenation.com and subscribe to Start Making Sense on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm John Wiener. Thanks for listening.
Know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save.